website at www.pacifica.org for review. Votes by the Pacifica National Board and the various local station boards regarding said amendments will occur thereafter.
And the previous program was the WBAI Evening News, heard daily at 6 p.m. here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for Extinction Rebellion Radio coming up.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the Rebellion.
Welcome to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM New York, co-hosted by Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. Extinction Rebellion is an international movement that uses nonviolent direct action to press for action on the climate emergency. This week, we have with us Raouf Ben Mohamed with Extinction Rebellion Tunisia, and he is also active with Stop Pollution Tunisia and with the Student Union. Raouf, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. It's important to talk about the problem in Tunisia and to be here with you. Important to share experience, to share story, to share what is happening here. So it's really a big opportunity and so nice to be with you. Thank you.
Yes. Yes, thank you so much. So Raouf, could you tell us about climate activism in Tunisia? What have you been up to specifically?
In Tunisia, we started in 2012, actually. It wasn't easy before 2011 because it was a dictator system. Mm-hmm. So after the revolution of Tunisia, we started a lot of social activism, and one of them about the climate justice, the climate, the right of climate justice and all. We understand the importance of talking about the climate change, the reality that the climate is changing and it's became more visible in Tunisia. So now we have a lot of groups in Tunisia talking about climate change. We have Extinction Rebellion, we have Fridays for Future, we have the Stop Pollution Group. And the best thing in Tunisia is that we are working together. We are doing coordination, we are talking together. When any group decide to go out to the street, you find a lot of people with them. Mm-hmm. And not only this, I mean, not only the groups who are talking about the climate justice or the groups who are talking about environment, but also we are working with all the groups who are talking about their human rights in general, like people who don't work, like the unemployed persons or any social rights. So now it became like big groups who are going outside together.
Are you all having conversations about the ways in which climate change and hunger and poverty and joblessness sort of work together?
Yeah, because when we talk about the climate change and about the environment, it's directly talking about the right of life. Mm-hmm. So this is the importance of the human rights. But for example, we have this problem of pollution in Gebes. It's about chemical pollution. And when we go to talk with the Minister of Environment or all the government, they say you have to choose if you want to have jobs or you have to work, because this campaign is really big. And it's the only source of having job. So they say, if you want to choose, if you have job or you have an environment, a good environment. I mean, it's human rights. We have the right to have jobs and to have an environment. We have the right to have both. It's a human right. And this is how the government trying to do with the groups of activism, with our group. Mm-hmm. This is how they are trying to make sometimes to make people against us, but we still have a lot of work to do.
If I follow you correctly, there's this coalition approach of lots of different groups in Tunisia coming together. groups of concerned about joblessness, groups concerned about human rights, and groups concerned about climate change and the environment. And the Tunisian government is trying to split you by saying that you can either have jobs or you can have a good environment, but we can't do a program of both. And it's trying to sort of split the coalition apart. So, I mean, how is I'm using the word coalition because that's what we say in the United States when it's a group of groups. this coalition approach across multiple types of issues, like, are there times when you don't all agree with each other? How is it working?
We need to work together. We know that they don't want to solve our problem. Sometimes happen problem when we talk about the clothes and industry, and another worker group, they want to keep this because it gives them job. Okay, that time we don't go out together. But we try to keep things that, so we don't fight. We are saying that, okay, maybe we are not, we don't have the same subject, or we are not asking for the same thing. But for now, we need each other. We need to be together. So even if we are not in the same way, we decide to not attack each other.
If I understood you right, the groups don't attack each other publicly. Even if you have a disagreement,
No.
You keep it amongst yourselves and you don't go public with it.
From the first time, we decide to not attack each other because we understand how the government works.
How do you all manage to keep that agreement together? That, you know, you have this understanding. What keeps that agreement together?
With a lot of experience, because we had a lot of problems before. Mm-hmm. It's not the first coalition. It's right. Maybe the fourth or the fifth. We had a lot of coalition before, and it failed. And we find that we need each other. For every time, we need each other. And we have a lot of places where to stay together. We are together in the worker union. We are together in the student union. We are together in human rights. We are together in many other groups. But everyone choose a topic to talk about. So we have many things in common. Mm-hmm. And things in common that we have is more than the other thing. So this is how we are trying to keep it strong. But when it happened, Indonesians understand that everything is possible. Mm-hmm. Understand that when you decide to do something and when you are together in a group, everything can happen. So actually, the first 2 years, Tunisia became so crazy. Every day in the street, everything, like you have like a big strikes and everything every day in the street.
You said something that really struck me, and that is from the Arab Spring demonstrations, you all realized that anything is possible. And that realization seems to have opened up so much. In terms of the things you can imagine for yourselves and in the kind of world that you want. Is that correct?
I mean, it's a normal thing because when I remember how it was before 2011, it was impossible to talk about the system. And everyone wants to change this, but everyone also saying that it's impossible because the old regime and the old person, he was really strong. All the policemen are with him. I mean, the parliament is in his hand, all the government in his hand. He do everything. So it was really impossible to change, but the changes happen. So it's normal when you see the change, when you see it in your eyes, and when you are one of people who make the change happen, and you know that before only maybe 24 hours, everything was impossible. And in just a few hours, everything has changed. You know how things can happen easily sometimes. Sometimes you think that it's impossible to happen, but some things can change a lot. So you feel that you are doing something, and you feel that everything is possible. And now what is happening in Tunisia, that everyone still remember, and they say, okay, we changed the old regime. We changed Ben Ali, so we can't do anything. And this is how everyone in the street and everyone believes that when he go in the street, he will make the change.
In the United States, we've had the same constitution since the 1780s. We've had the same political structure. There's a lot of people who would like to see political change and believe that it's impossible. Of course, we don't have a single person as a dictator figure, but we do have a ruling class that holds the reins of politics. It sounds like Tunisians could have something to teach Americans about believing in what's possible. What would you like to say to our American audience when so many left-oriented political Americans believe that a big change is just impossible?
We believe in Tunisia about the start. I mean, I'm not talking about the whole Tunisian, but for us at least, we believe that there is a strategy and tactic. And when you choose the right tactic, you will achieve your strategy. Because every step you are doing and you are making, it is to achieve your goals. So making the change doesn't happen when you just go outside without make attitude or like, yeah, but to know exactly the problem. Yeah, it's not just to go outside and to talk, but you have to know exactly when you go out, because sometimes you go out and you find only 10 persons with us outside in the street, and sometimes we found 3,000 persons. So you have to choose the right moment. It's not a question, is it possible to make a big change or no? It's we have to make it. I'm not asking for is it possible or no. The only way is to make it. And the question is how to do that. So we all know that we need the big change happen. We're all seeing the injustice happen in the world.
You are listening to WBAI 99.5 FM New York. This is Extinction Rebellion Radio with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. This week we are speaking with Raouf Ben Mohamed from Extinction Rebellion Tunisia, talking about climate activism in Tunisia, talking about the revolution in Tunisia that took place in 2011, and talking about how the climate crisis is affecting Tunisia. Raouf, we do have an occasional segment on this show about how the climate crisis is affecting different parts of the world. And we love to talk to people from all over the world to say how the climate crisis is affecting their home. What are some of the ways that climate is affecting Tunisia and is expected to affect Tunisia in the near future?
Some season of the year, like we have summer, we have the fall season in Tunisia, now we don't have them again. I mean, it's raining every time, and after that, it changed in a radical way. I mean, today it's 25 degrees, and it's winter. In summer, the last year, it was 50 degrees or 52 in some places in Tunisia. It was impossible for the first time. Now, in the Mediterranean Sea, we have a lot of radical change happening. We have a lot of new kind of fish. It's not their place to live there, so they're attacking the other kind. And sometimes when you talk with the farmer, they say it's not like before at all. They are waiting to give water to the plant in this time of the year. And everything has changed, so they have to change all the way of working. The quality of the fruit is not the same because sometimes it's so hot or it's so cold. We don't understand anything no more, and it's really visible how the change is happening. So everyone you're talking with now, because the climate change is, for some people, it's a new thing to talk about, especially for the old people. But they don't use the word of the climate change, but they say everything is changed, nothing is like before. And when they say that, you understand that they are talking about this, and they see that, and it was so clear.
So help us understand the topography of Tunisia. You know, first a reminder to folks who are listening, this is a North African country wedged in between Algeria and Libya. And it's directly south of the armpit of Italy across the Mediterranean Sea. And it's quite close to Sicily. One of the narrowest parts of the Mediterranean Sea separates Tunisia from Sicily. So there's a long coastline, right? With the capital city, Tunis, right there on the coastline. Is it going to be flooding?
Yeah, because in the way how it is in Tunisia, like everyone now in Tunisia are going to the capital or going to the city just next to the beach there. So we don't have a lot of capitals or a lot of big city. We have only one capital that you find everything there. And we have like two or three other big cities like Sfax, Sousse and Naples. So in Tunisia, we are 12 million. You find 8 million, maybe, or 7 million in just three big cities. Mm-hmm. And the other is like empty places. So people, they're not doing farming and no agriculture in Tunisia. And that's why I was talking about the economic system, because it's all based on this industry. So everyone is looking on industry. He just go there to find a job there. So in some small places like the capital of Tunisia, you can find more than a million person, more and more. And you find everything in just small city. And this is what makes a lot of problem. And one of them is pollution, when you find a lot of people in just small place. And yeah, it's...
Are you worried about flooding in Tunis, since it's so close to the coastline? Are you worried about the sea level rise there?
Yeah, I mean, the way how is people now, because we have this problem like more than 50 years now when this started to happen. And there was a lot of projects who are talking about people in the same place and in the same city. You can see someone is so rich and someone is so poor, mm-hmm. in the same school. So this is what makes a lot of problem, social problem. That we are trying to avoid, but it's all about the system, how the system works, how the system choose to work. Because when you build everything in just three city, for example, in my city, Gabes, it's not a small city, but you don't have any really big hospital. You didn't have an university, and you only find big hospitals in just three city. You only find, for example, University of Medicines or big university in the capital. So it's not just to choose to go there, but they push you to go to some of big cities to study there or to find jobs there, because they are building everything in this small places in the city. And if you are staying in your home or in your old city, you will stay in the same way, or you're not going to change anything in your life, so you have to go there. For example, okay, it's another problem, but now my family, we change, we sell our house and we came to the capital of Tunisia. We are in Tunis now, but we do that because of pollution. I have to be here because my doctor is here. I had kidney transplant. I don't have a way how to buy medicines when I am in my city, because I have to buy medicine in a big hospital. So I have to go every month to the capital so I can buy my medicines. And it's not a solution. Also, my brother is doing dialysis because of the pollution in Tunisia, in Gebes. And you don't have really good health care there in Gebes, in my city. So we decided to come here. And it's the same for a lot of other. Sometimes you find in the same family, like three of them, everyone is working in a place. So this family decided to go there because it became easier for them. So sometimes not people who decide to go, but how the government and how the system push them to go there.
Yeah. You're describing cities and settlements and housing right on the beach. So as the sea level rises, a lot of that is going to get covered over by water. Where will people go? What will be the migration Or what's the migration already that's taking?
They have to learn how to swim, I think. This is how the government think, maybe. Because after that, I mean, this will happen. Maybe in 10 or two, because we are seeing a lot of catastrophes happen, like a lot of earthquake and a lot of things happen in the city now. And this will happen maybe in 10 or 20 years, this will happen. So I think they will have to build everything from new. Because we don't have anything in the center of Tunisia and the west of Tunisia, near to Algeria, I mean. Not in the beach, we have nothing. And when this happened, I think we will start thinking about building in New Tunisia. And maybe this would be better because we don't have anything. But yeah, a good question. And to where will they go? They will just go to the other city in the west, or they will... No one have a real answer. And it's a question that the government need to ask, because you have nothing. It's not only this, but maybe when a big catastrophe happened, maybe like tsunami or something happened, and the whole of the city will be under the water, and you don't have any hospital in the other places. So are you ready for that? No university, no airport. So Tunisia will be closed.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM, New York City. And we're speaking with Raouf Ben Mohamed, an activist from Extinction Rebellion in other areas in Tunisia.
I mean, I'm not in the government to decide what to do. We have to do pressure. That's all we have. But I'm not sure. I think they don't have any mind. They don't have any vision. They don't think about anything. Let's hope for the best.
Can you speak to us about the water supply in Tunisia? The water.
Okay. Now Tunisia is one of the most countries that have the problem of water. And maybe in the few years, coming years, we are not going to find any water to drink. And it looks like the government, they're not going to do anything about that. We still have the same industry that use a lot of water. Like, for example, the industry of phosphate. They have to wash the phosphate with water, and they use a lot of water in that. We start in this COP. It was a big chance to see a lot of activists from many countries. I was talking with some activists from Algeria, from Morocco, and we are trying to build a coordination about the country of the desert of Africa, the Sahara, because we have the same problem of water. So now we start talking about some activists. We are trying to build this Extinction Rebellion coordination between activists in Tunisia, Algeria, Morocco, Mali, Niger, Chad. We have some of activists, and Senegal and Mauritania, because we have the same problem. And we didn't start working yet. I mean, we have some experience before. We have an observator of water in Tunisia that we are working together with them. We have this research with them. So we have some information about how is the situation exactly. And yes, this year we will start, and we have this in our program. With this coordination, we will try to work together because we have the same problem. And when as an activist, sometimes it's not easy. You have only to talk about the problem, maybe you have some idea about how it is, the solution, but you are not who make decision. So you only have to do pressure, and you only have to ask, and you only have to fight for your right. Mm-hmm. We know how is the situation is really dangerous in Tunisia now about water. We know that in 10 years, Tunisia will be, I mean, we see the last year how the river with no water, no raining. I mean, we are now in November, about to be in December, and there is no rain. So, yes, it is a really big problem. And yes, we have to work about that. And yes, the government have to know that it is a really big problem and has to start working about that now. And yes, that's why when we are talking about the whole economic system, because this campaign are using all the water for nothing.
Yeah.
It's better to drink this water and to save it, not to just throw it in some industry like this. and we don't know what to do but just to keep fighting. Maybe we will do some recession to give them something, but I think they know everything, but they just don't want to change because how the capitalists work in Tunisia, they have this campaign, they own them, and they just decide to keep it this way because they are making a lot of money because of that. So that's why before I said it's fight against the whole system. And that's, so we have just to keep working. We have just to keep doing pressure on them.
Just keep working. Raouf, thank you very much for joining us today, all the way from Tunisia.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
This has been Extinction Rebellion Radio.
Can't find that on the radio.
Well, tune in to WBAI and you certainly will get an earful.
You'll turn to that station.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
And you can ensure that WBAI is here for you now and in the future through WBAI's Tower Fund. Go to towerfund.wbai.org and contribute what you can to ensure that the room which houses WBAI's transmitter at 4 Times Square, which costs $17,000 a month, is paid through the coming year. Please go to towerfund.wbai.org or phone 212-209-2950 to help secure WBAI's future.
Thank you to all of you for contributing, and we hope that you are, we hope that you will decide to make a contribution in support of this commercial-free, listener-sponsored radio station.
November 8, 2021 is the notice date to propose Pacifica bylaws amendments. The proposed amendments may be found on the Foundation's website at www.pacifica.org for review. Votes by the Pacifica National Board and the various local station boards regarding said amendments will occur thereafter.
WBAI's local station board is holding its next meeting on Wednesday, December 8th at 7 p.m. This December will be the first meeting of the new local station board. We will be seating and welcoming a slate of recently elected LSB members. Come meet the new members. Again, the LSB meeting is Wednesday, December 8th at 7 p.m. The meeting will be held through the Zoom remote meeting service. The meeting, accessible to the public, includes an opportunity for public comment. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacifica calendar and on the WBAI website. You can also access the meeting by calling 929-205-6099, 929-205-6099, and enter this meeting ID, 922-457-2995. And if that wasn't enough numbers, we also have a password. The password is 995, like WBAI's frequency 99.5. So it's 995-995-99.
This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels. The Institute of the Black World 21st Century's Black Family Summit proudly announces the Community Cares Listening Line for Black first responders and essential workers. We're here and we're listening. The Community Cares Listening Line is a free, confidential service staffed with responsive volunteers who can provide emotional support and share information with our callers. If you're feeling anxious, afraid, distressed, burdened, or overwhelmed by a range of emotions, please call the Community Cares Listening Line at 877-719-1117. That's 877-719-1117.
Join us on November 26th to December 12th at Cinema Village, Sinopolis, and virtually as we celebrate 29 years of the ADIFF, the film festival that always brings you great films about people of color all over the world. Discover over 70 entertaining and revealing fiction and documentary films, including 38 world, U.S., and New York premieres. The African Diaspora International Film Festival from November 26th to December 12th. For tickets and schedule, go to nyadiff.org or call 212-864-1760. That's 212-864-1760.